So I have a video that I want to share with you this morning. It features Parker Palmer, and I'm going to talk a little bit about Parker Palmer here. He's an author, an educator, and an activist who focuses his life on issues of education, community, leadership, spirituality, and social change. After graduating from university with a doctorate in philosophy, Palmer became involved with the Religious Society of Friends, better known as the Quakers, and today he considers himself to be a Quaker. As a Unitarian Universalist, I am eager to learn from people of goodwill of all religious faiths or none. So when I have an opportunity to do a little teaching, I'd like to do that. So this morning we have a little bit of an opportunity to learn about Religious Society of Friends or Quakers, and it's a very long, complicated, and beautiful story, so I only get to touch on some of the highlights here. And I believe there is a Quaker, at least one in the audience. You can correct me later. Please don't correct me during my sermon. So, I have time here just to share a few facts about this important religious movement. So, the picture is of George Fox, who in 1650, reacting to the overwhelming role of the clergy in the Church of England, began preaching that it was possible to have a direct experience of Christ, to be taught by Christ directly, if you will, without the benefit of ordained clergy. That red and black star that's beside him has been used as a symbol for the Quaker service since the late 19th century, unofficially, and it was officially adopted by the American Friends Service Committee in 1917. And there are all kinds of subtle variations of that star that you'll see for different Quaker organizations. In 1650, Fox was charged with religious blasphemy. According to his autobiography, the magistrates, leading the persecution, was the first that called us Quakers. Fox wrote, "Because I bade them tremble at the word of the Lord." And so Quaker was the title, and so Quaker, as was the title Unitarian, by the way, originally was an epithet. It was a derogatory term. It was an insult, a term of ridicule. But both terms would eventually be adopted by their respective followers with pride. In 1650, individual Quaker women prophesied and preached publicly, developing charismatic personas and spreading the sect. The practice was bolstered by the movement's firm concept of spiritual equality between men and women in 1650 in England. Like Unitarians and Universalists, the theology, practices, and traditions of Quakers have evolved over the past 500 years or so. And today, according to Wikipedia, there are about 400,000 Quakers around the world. Interestingly, half of these are now in Africa. According to Wikipedia, around 89% of Quakers worldwide belong to the evangelical or the program branch of Quakerism. These Quakers worship in services with singing and prepared messages from the Bible coordinated by a pastor, much like you would think of most Christian churches. But around 11% of the Friends practiced waiting worship or unprogrammed worship, more commonly known today as meeting for worship. And here the order of service is not planned in advance, and it may include unprepared vocal ministry from those present, and it is predominantly silent. We had a memorial service yesterday, which took quite a bit of my time. So I was working late last night on this. I'm going to read that again. Orders of service that are not planned in advance, predominantly silent. It occurred to me last night that when I was working on this that a completely unplanned and largely silent service might be a good idea. Especially when the minister is behind schedule. So if you see a notice at the last minute we're having a Quaker service, you'll know why. But I did call Roger Davis. Roger Davis and Helen Lofgren are members of this congregation, and they're Quakers who attend services along the lines of that waiting worship described above. I believe that congregation meets now at the Ecology Action Center. So I called Roger last night to ask him, tell him I was going to be speaking about Parker Palmer today. And I get the sense from talking with Roger that Parker Palmer is more beloved today among Unitarians than among Quakers. Maybe better known among Unitarians than among Quakers. And Quakers are now a very diverse group, including those with evangelical, liberal, and traditional Quaker understandings of Christianity. Interestingly, there are also non-theist Quakers, whose spiritual practice is not reliant on the existence of a Christian God. Humanist Quakers, if you will. To differing extents, the differing movements that make up the Religious Society of Friends avoid creeds and hierarchical structures. We have a lot in common with Quakers. Members of the various Quaker movements are all generally united by a belief in the ability of each human being to experience access to a light within, or that of God in everyone. So I promised to talk about welcoming the soul, and I'll let Parker Palmer explain his concept of soul. And note that he doesn't use the words, either the adjective, either mortal or immortal.
I always try to acknowledge the fact that this is one of those words that has to be held very lightly because it points toward a mystery, and it's a mystery for which nobody has the true name or the real story. Every tradition has, I think, a different name for it. The Hasidic Jews call it the spark of the divine in every human being. Buddhists, I think, call it Big Self sometimes, or Self with a capital S. Thomas Merton called it True Self. Quakers, I'm a Quaker, and we tend to call it the inner light, the inner teacher. And I think all of these are synonyms for the same thing, and what that thing is, no one really knows. The best I can do is to say it's the being in human being. So what a person calls it doesn't matter to me, but that we call it something matters a lot. Since the soul itself is a mystery that nobody has a name for, I think the closest you can come is with an image or a metaphor. And the metaphor that I landed on some time ago, I just found enormously helpful, which is this, that the soul, as I experience it, is very much like a wild animal. On the one hand, a wild animal has the capacity to survive in the deep, dark woods, in very difficult places where there's hardly anything to eat. A wild animal has strength and has resilience and has a kind of wiliness and a kind of knowing about survival that the human soul has, on which we depend. I think everybody who's ever been in a really tough situation would say, something inside me allowed me to keep going. Something inside me kept carrying me forward. So the soul has this strength, but at the same time, just like a wild animal, the soul is also very shy. And we know that if we want to see a wild animal, the last thing we should do is run crashing into the woods, yelling and screaming for it to come out. What we need to do is to walk into the woods quietly, sit at the base of a tree, breathe with the earth for a while, and eventually the thing we seek may put in an appearance. If it does, we may only catch it out of the corner of our eye, but to see something so original, so wild, so natural, so elemental, I think for most of us is never to forget it.
may see the connection with that picture on the cover of the Order of Service today, that little deer in the forest. In Parker's metaphor, the soul is like that wild deer. It'll emerge only if we're still and we're patient. I chose to speak on the topic of welcoming the soul this morning because of the experience that I've had and am having working with a small but growing group of young adults here in the congregation. It's a group of about 10 young adults that we meet every second Tuesday night with the goal of exploring their sense of spirituality as a guide for how to find their way forward in a world that's hard to find anything to hold on to today. These are my words, not theirs. In preparing to establish this group, I contacted my colleagues around the country for advice on starting a small, intimate group for people to share experience. And there are lots of books on this. Small ministry books in our tradition, there's a dozen. But they recommended very strongly, I got feedback from several of them, that we use the book Hidden Wholeness by Parker Palmer, and that's the book that we are working our way through now. The title of the book, Hidden Wholeness, comes from lines in a poem by the Christian mystic Thomas Merton. He wrote, "There is in all visible things an invisible fecundity, a dimmed light, a meek namelessness, a hidden wholeness. This mysterious unity and integrity is wisdom, the mother of all. Nature doing what nature does." Burton speaks of a hidden wholeness behind everything, something mysterious that connects all of reality, that integrates all things, that is the mother, the creative force behind it all. Palmer's work is fundamentally based on his belief in what he calls the soul. And as you heard him describe, he has a hard time describing except through metaphor. My interpretation of what he has to say is that our soul is one unique facet of our being. It's a facet of our being that we all have that is largely formed before we're born. We're born with this innate character. But it's a facet that we can tap into that will provide us with answers in times of need, if we can be quiet and still and listen. There's a direct line between Palmer's description of the soul and the Quaker idea of the light within and George Fox's teaching that we can learn from Christ directly without the intercession of an ordained minister. Parker uses the term circle of trust to describe these groups. It's a structure to welcome that shy and that wild soul, that hidden wholeness that we need to learn from, to acknowledge, and to listen to. The meetings begin with a few ground rules, and as I put this together, I can only give you the briefest introduction. Hopefully, I can pique your interest. There's a display, I guess we didn't mention it, but I think there's a display from the library committee, and they'll be getting at least one copy of this that we can put out on loan. Anyway, he's laid out, Parker Palmer's, after years working with this, has laid out some guide rules for how these should function. And I printed them all off, but I'm not going to read them all. There are a lot of things you would expect. The confidentiality is extremely important. One thing that's really unique is, I'm going to read that section if I can find it. What is offered is a circle of invitation, not demand. It is a not share or die event. Have you been in those things where you're invited to make a comment and you're sitting in a circle and someone's passing the microphone around and it's getting closer and closer to you and you're not listening to what anybody's saying because you're trying to think about what am I going to say when it comes my turn? He does away with all of that. He talks about that as being a violent intrusion on people. So you sit in a circle, as the Quakers, my understanding, until someone feels that it's time for them to speak, and they will speak. And if no one speaks, that's fine. And if one or two people speak and the rest don't, that's fine. It's not, so as he said, it's not a share or die event. During the retreat, do whatever your soul calls for, and know that what you do it with our support. He gives several examples of people who have attended these things and sat in silence for a half a dozen or more sessions before they spoke, before they were ready to speak. This is a big part. So I said Unitarians and Quakers have a lot in common. Here's one place that we could, I think we could learn a lot from the Quakers, but we're not in necessarily in sync. One of his rules, no fixing, no saving, no advising, no setting each other straight. This is one of the hardest guidelines for those of us who are in the helping professions, but it's one of the most vital rules if we wish to make a space that welcomes the soul, the inner teacher. So you can imagine someone in that circle of trust wanting to say something. Maybe wanting to acknowledge that they have a gambling problem, that they can't afford to pay their get food for their children because they're buying lottery tickets and they really hope they're going to win something. And the person is thinking about saying that. It's like that deer might come out of the forest. And as soon as they say it, someone says, oh, that's terrible. You know, you got to feed your kids. You can't. And the deer flees. You know, like you need to let people express what's on their soul without trying to fix them. And the belief is that we have the answers inside. And if we will just listen to what we're saying, we'll find the answer. But it's very different than the way we conduct a lot of meetings. So those are just two of the rules, and I could refer you to the book if you'd like to read more. So he talks about these circles of trust as being places specifically intended to bring out the soul. And I, in my terms, not his, I talked about the soul being one facet of who we are as human beings. So he talks about several other facets. He talks about our intellect, part of who we are. He talks about our emotions, it's part of who we are. He talks about our energy and our goal-orientedness as part of who we are. And our ego. How important is that as a facet of who we are? And he says, we know how to create spaces that invite the intellect to show up, analyzing reality, parsing logic, arguing its case. Such spaces can be found, for example, in universities and in a lot of Unitarian churches after the sermon. I put that in, he didn't. So we know how to promote the intellect. We know how to design a space that promotes the intellect, a debate. We know how to create spaces that invite emotions into play, reacting to energy, injury, expressing anger, celebrating joy. These can be found, among many other places, in therapy groups. I think they can be found in a good Unitarian service as well, maybe during our joys and sorrows portion of our service. We know how to create spaces that invite the will to emerge, consolidating energy and efforts on behalf of a shared goal. They can be found in our task forces and in our committees. When we get together to do some work, that's the facet of our personality that we're working on. And we certainly know how to create spaces that invite the ego to put in its appearance, polishing its image and protecting its turf and demanding its rights. We find that wherever we go. But we know very little about creating spaces that invite the soul to make itself known. Apart from the natural world, as he said, if you go into the forest, if you sit quietly, many of us find that's a unique place where we can get in touch with our soul. We must come together in ways that respect the solitude of the soul, that avoid the unconscious violence we do when we try to save each other. When someone raises a problem and you try to fix it for them, Parker describes that as unconscious violence. We try to save each other with efforts that evoke our capacity to hold another life without dishonoring its mystery, never trying to coerce the other into meeting our own needs. He talks a lot about when you are in these circles of trust and you speak, you may think you're speaking to a poem that might be the subject that's the discussion for the night, but what you're doing is projecting your experience in life as it's being drawn out by that poem. Whenever we speak, we're projecting ourselves. And that's when you do violence to someone else. When someone else is in a vulnerable position and you start projecting your opinions and your needs on that other person. So our young adult group is exploring ways to welcome the soul. And when we have more experience with this, we hope to extend the opportunity to all members and friends of the congregation. Our young adult group will wrap up at the end of November. We'll have finished the book and we're then deciding where we'll go from there. And one possibility is we'll invite other people in to form larger circles. I hope that happens. I hope the idea of the soul is something that we can speak about in a Unitarian church. A couple of weeks ago, I got away with speaking about spirituality. I'm pushing the envelope again today. So I hope we can do that and walk together in that experience.